Here we go, my friends. See, I'm not playing the applause because I noticed last time with Mr. Marcus Labine, the applause kind of like fucked up my audio a little bit. Speaking of fucked up, here we go. The following video contains explicit language, which may be offensive to some viewers and or inappropriate for children. The content within this video is intended for mature audiences only. Bam. Well, here we go. Night of the Living Dreads. I'm Otis B. Dreads, of course. As you see under me, we have Mr. Jackal Monkey, who is, I think, probably trying to connect with our guest. What was that him?
He's coming.
All right, Well, we got some formalities to get out of the way while we're waiting for people to join in. Of course, nightlivingdreads.com, dreads with no A. You can check out all of the audio podcasts. We've been taking all of these interviews that we've been having and, you know, putting them out on YouTube, taking the audio and putting that on nightlivingdreads.com. So, hey, where can people get a mask? I know that's what everyone's wondering now, Jack.
Yeah, absolutely. Especially everything coming back up again, you know. But all that... hit me up on Facebook, Nightmare Ninja Studios, and we'll make you, you know, if you need a custom latex mask or if you want a hockey mask or a Hannibal Lecter mask, and we'll make your nightmares become a reality.
That's right. You will, sir. I give you applause every time I hear that tagline. This evening, we have special effects. God is kind of what you put him on. We have this gentleman here, Mr. Bill Hunt, with us tonight. Let's just bring him in. He just got in with us. Bill, how are you, sir?
Hey guys,
how's it going? You. Hell yeah, likewise. Thank you very much for joining us.
I'm chuffed to be part of the show. So you almost made me spit out my coffee.
Oh, God, my goodness.
God's a bit generous.
Well, don't do that. You know, I've got my big cup filled here myself. I don't want to waste the good Java. So thank you, sir, for joining us. You know, Jackal Monkey, a.k.a. James Carnes, as you know him by.
Nice to meet you.
Likewise. Yeah, finally get to talk.
I know. I'm going to hand it over to James. He has so much to talk with you about your career, the movies you've worked on. I told him before the show, I was talking to a coworker of mine, let him know who was coming on the show. I said, yeah, he worked on some small films. You may have heard of them, you know, Lord of the Rings, Avatar. I mean, just some small little flicks, you know, nothing big time or anything.
He's off the street.
Right. So, James, go ahead. Take the floor, sir. I know you want to pick this man's brain. I want to listen to it because I've seen your work and I'm blown away.
For sure, man. And thank you again. And like I was saying, how a lot of people don't, if they don't know how you and I actually connected was whenever I reached out to you, I was wanting to make a replica of the Jason Goes to Hell hockey mask, which you made the hockey mask for the film. Yeah. And I was wanting to make it in honor of my late father. And you helped me out, you know, step of the way, you know, and gave me, you know, some pictures and some videos, you know, and like I said, really walked me through the process, and we ended up with a really badass mask, I felt. And that really touched me right there. And then that's whenever my admiration grew even more so. And then I felt like our friendship really did blossom. And anytime I had any kind of advice or anything, I would reach out to you and you would actually reach back out to me. I was like, holy shit. Like, he actually answered me. This is awesome.
But it's my pleasure.
One of the really one of the artists that I've ever seen, you know, just actually helped me out. Like, that was a huge honor to me. Like, and I you know, it's something I'll never forget.
I'm happy to help. I'm happy to be asked. Thank you. That's really kind.
Well,
just to clarify, the hockey masks I made were only the post-explosion hockey masks.
Right.
So the ones with the gas right. taken out the side.
Right.
There were a bunch of us that made a bunch of the masks all together. But then that was kind of a last-minute thing to say, okay, well, let's give it some damage after the explosion, which, you know, makes sense. So
right. For sure. But yeah, I mean, you did work in that, and then like I started looking, and I didn't even know it. Hell, you basically shaped my childhood unknowingly too. Like you had sculpted Goldar's face from Mighty Morphin Power Rangers, right?
I got a lot to own up to. It's God. Yeah, I'm right place at the right time, and I was just never afraid to make big leaps as well, some kind of scary ones sometimes, but you know it all worked out, and now I'm living in an island paradise and making monsters at my leisure, and so you know I don't know
right.
But it's largely just being at the right place at the right time and having the willingness to jump.
Right. Shoot. Yeah. Yeah. And see, and that's what I'm kind of going through a little bit right now myself. But I mean, whenever you started working on Lord of the Rings, is that when you sort of just fell in love with New Zealand and decided to move there? Or?
Oh, dude. That's we came over here because I was working at KMB at the time. KMB was doing Hercules and Xena. And then, like the year before I moved over here, Richard Taylor came over to Los Angeles because he was friends with Howard Berger. So a bunch of us went out to lunch, and he couldn't actually talk about what he was working on, but they dropped some pretty clear hints that I was able to pick up on.
Right.
I love the animated Hobbits and Return of the King when I was a kid. The ones that were on TV. The first thing I ever painted was Bilbo Baggins from that Rankin Bass. Animated Hobbit.
That's so awesome.
You know, and Conan the Barbarian is actually my favorite film as well.
Awesome.
And just knowing awesome. They really wanted to go with a real, real gritty, realistic tone for these. And so I was on board right away. But once, let me make sure I got this straight. No, Weta was doing, we started doing Herc and Xena when the show started. At K&B, and then the job went to Weta a couple of years after that. But when Weta started working on Lord of the Rings, and they couldn't work on anything else, so Herc and Xena went back to K&B. So after having a great lunch on getting on like a house on fire with Richard and a couple of guys that came over, K&B sent me over to Auckland, to do two episodes of Herc and Xena. So while I was here, I came down because I knew Gino Acevedo previously. We'd worked on Mouth of Madness and Spawn and a few other things. But he was already here doing a short, like a 6-week tour of duty. So first weekend I had off, jumped on a plane, flew down to Wellington. It was an hour flight. And we spent the weekend, just me and Gino and Richard and Alan Lee, just driving around Wellington. And it was just, I fell in love with it then. You know, it's in Wellington small. I was very grateful to have the time in Auckland first, because Auckland is was a million people at the time, 1 million out of 3 million in the country.
Oh wow!
So it was good to. If I had gone straight from LA to Wellington, it would have broken me, I think. But it was good to go to Auckland first and tap the brakes a little bit.
Right.
But yeah, I just absolutely fell in love with the place, and then once the it's just one of those things, man, that's everything around me just seemed to kind of start to crumble when I got back to LA, you know, to the point where I was like, you know, what the hell is happening?
Right.
And just when the last thing dropped out from under me, then the phone rang and it was Richard. I'm like, well, that's me for the next 2 years. And off we went. So, but it's, I probably would have been more reluctant to commit to the time if everything hadn't kind of disintegrated under my feet in LA. So it's just, it's
right.
It happens for a reason apparently, but it put me in the right mindset and I'm like, we're gone.
Here we go.
I was just getting ready to say that. It sounds like something happened for a reason, and you know where you're at, and you know that is obviously for a reason. And hey, it came along with a good experience with Lord of the Rings. Here's something I found on IMDb. This says per a TV interview on Tennessee Crossroads in 1989, it re-aired apparently in 2017. The first movie you saw was Jaws at an early age, while your parents thought you were asleep.
Yeah, I was a good baby. I don't know what happened. Probably on a horror movie. But yeah, they would take me to movies and I'd fall asleep. But the first one they wanted to see Jaws, so they took me, and I stayed awake through it and just loved it. It scared the shit out of me, but I just loved it. My mom kept trying to put her hand over my eyes. I kept pulling it down. I went home and the first thing I did was break out the crayons and drew a big bloody shark on the kitchen door. They bought me paper after that, gratefully. it warped me. I never stood a chance after that. And then it's the first thing that I first movie that I asked to see was the 76 remake of King Kong.
Mm-hmm. Nice.
So that's, I think I had gotten hooked on Planet of the Apes, and I'm sure I would have seen the original King Kong on TV, but that was the first movie that I actually asked to see. So cut to many years later, we're wrapping up Return of the King, and I find out that the next project that we're doing is a new King Kong. That's I've been put where I'm supposed to be.
Exactly.
That's where you're supposed to be.
Right.
That is crazy. Is there a movie that has been made already, or possibly one that hasn't been made but you maybe would like to see made and work on? Is there any movies? I mean, because your list of work, at least on IMDb, is quite extensive. And pretty elite when it comes to the movies that you've worked on. I mean, these aren't just little B movies or anything that you've worked on. Pretty big movies. Is there any ones that you would have liked to have worked on, but didn't either get the chance or didn't pursue it?
Well, funnily, when I had just made the commitment to come over and signed a contract for 2 years, and I just been here for maybe a year or so, and that's when I heard that George Romero was making another Dead film.
Oh,
that was tough for me. I went to Richard, and I said, you know, I hate to even ask, but you know, George Romero is making another Dead film, and I feel pretty sure that I could get on it. How would you feel about me taking a little bit of time off? And it ended up not happening, gratefully. But that's, yeah, I would have liked to have worked on a Romero zombie film. I got my work into the Chainsaw remake, the Texas Chainsaw remake.
Yes.
Just purely by coincidence. It's something
tell us about that. Yeah.
Okay. Well, it was me being in two places at one time, basically. Unbeknownst to me, but I worked for K&B for almost 10 years, and they've got a massive catalog of molds from all the work that they've done. So I come over here, and I'm skeptical at best about the proposition of a Chainsaw remake from Michael Bay. Are you kidding? All right, well, this is something that I can go and I can sit down and I can watch it purely as a spectator and let it wash over me. So I'm watching it, and I loved it. It surprised me at every turn. That's I've never had any idea I'd be that impressed with it. But when Uncle Monty rolls out the front door and it does a tight close-up on those knee stumps, I sculpted those.
Nice.
And I recognized them. And it pulled me right out of the movie. But it's if you've seen Very Bad Things, it's a 30-year-old movie. I'm still concerned about spoilers. But the knee stumps at the end of that are the ones that I sculpted. And they've got a very distinctive little pattern to them. So, yeah, I saw those pop up. So technically I've worked on a chainsaw and an Elm Street and a Friday. Two of my favorite vampire films ever. That's just purely lucky that I got to work on things that I enjoyed. But yeah, I would still love to get a Halloween and a Hellraiser for my CV. But I would, of all of them, I would like to actually be on set and do some work. If I were still inclined for that kind of thing, I'm a bit old for it now.
Right.
But it's a younger man's game, I believe. But yeah, I would love to be more involved in a chainsaw film. And of course, any Friday that comes along, I'm happy to jump in wherever I can.
No, absolutely.
And that's what I was going to say too. We have a picture of one of your sculpts of your version of Jason, and it's one like I just cannot help but just be in.
Thank you. Sorry, you broke up there just at the end. But yeah, that's that one was 2010. I think I did that.
Oh wow.
It's been a little while, and I just can't stop doing them. I don't know what it is about the series, but I keep going back to them. I don't go back to the Elm Streets. I don't go back to the Halloweens. But there's just something about the simplicity and the emotional core as well with the Friday films.
Right.
That whole relationship between Jason and his mother makes it different than all the other franchises. As basic a formula as it is, love the Fridays.
Right.
What was the inspiration behind this particular version, your version of Jason? Because it is, quite different in different aspects from the Jason that we've all seen. What went behind this?
This one was, again, my never-ending OCD struggle against continuity of the series. So, I just wanted to see a Jason with that. There was basically just a map of everything that he's been through and endured and everything that's happened to him.
Yeah.
So it's an obviously hugely inspired by Beekler's Jason, Beekler's Jason, the Kevin Yeager and Jim Cagle Jason from Final Chapter. I absolutely love as well.
Hell yeah.
And the Jason Goes to Hell Jason. I still love. I was 21 when I moved out to LA, and that's my first job.
Wow.
You know, and I get out there and there I am. I'm looking at Jason, and the skin's growing over the straps like a tree. And she's like, this is cool.
Hell yeah.
So I'm just pulling all those things. And it was Wayne Toth did the sculpture for that, for the Jason Goes to Hell cowl. And I still love that one. So
yeah, I think Wayne also worked with Rob Zombie in a few of his movies doing the special.
I believe so. Yeah.
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 Wayne's,
I
love stuff. He's got such a distinctive style. It inspires me every time I see it.
Speaking of stuff, what is in your background? My goodness, we have some Jason over there in your background. Well, you got some pretty cool stuff beautiful. Over there.
That's the one that I did last year. So there's a.
That's so badass.
Sorry. That's from Never Hike in the Snow.
Wow.
It just came out last year.
Uh-huh.
This is a character that I'm evolving, basically, and just having a really good time with. This is another incarnation of my Jason 3000. So
wow,
this is fucking awesome.
an eventuation of the timeline, basically past and in incorporating Jason Goes to Hell and Jason X. So it's he's filled with nanobots and he's got deadite germs, cells, whatever running around inside of him.
Awesome. So
things like these cuts that just won't heal. The nanobots and the deadite don't really know what to do with this. So they just start sticking teeth.
Yeah, I love it. Love it.
So yeah, that and the mask at this point is more of a kind of a bone alloy.
Right.
I'm not getting this reverse camera very well.
No, you got it right there.
Yeah, that is awesome. Yeah, that's perfect. Yeah, that's so badass. And I love the detail on the skin. Yeah. It's just like the translucency in the skin and with the vein work, just like ah. Your work never ceases to amaze me, sir.
Thank you. I'm having a great time doing it. So that makes all the
difference. Yeah.
See some of the stuff that I didn't enjoy doing. It's hardly inspirational.
Right. And then some of your oil paintings that you have there in the background as well. Oh, ooh. Ooh.
This is the guy that I did last year. So there's mine. Yeah.
Wow.
That is beautiful.
AKA the artifact.
Holy crap.
That is absolutely beautiful.
So I love the idea of these roots growing through.
Yeah.
It's I'm a big Swamp Thing and Bernie Wrightson fan as well. So that's
hell yeah.
Permeates everything that I do also. So
Now, do you sell pieces like that?
I do, but they cost them. They cost $1 million.
Oh no!
It just takes me forever. It just takes a long time because I do everything by hand. I'm not actually set up for this kind of thing. You mentioned my painting. We moved into this place in my new studio 5 years ago. And after that, I really just kind of took a break from sculpting altogether. And it's the oil painting. I love being able to just paint something and finish it and put it down. Then it's done.
Right.
Right.
The sculpture has got to be molded. It's got to be cast and run and painted and all these other things that I'm just not set up to do, really.
Right. I understand that. Yeah, that's why I have a couple of sculpts that I've been working on for a couple of years now that I haven't finished yet, because it's just there's a lot of steps and a lot of shit that goes into it.
Tell me all about it. I feel your pain. I do.
Your oil paintings. We got a picture of one of them, of one of the leather faces that you did from Texas Chainsaw 2. Oh well, yeah, that was another one that you did. The
wrong one.
That was Barlow, right?
Peter from What We Do in the Shadows.
Oh yeah.
And that's the actor that played him as well.
That's so bad.
A friend of mine's been sick, and he actually did the makeup for the film. So I auctioned off that painting to help pay for his medical costs.
Oh, wow. And that was a terrific, terrific piece as well. And then, we've got another picture of...
Give me just 1 second. I was slacking on my duties. Talk amongst yourself. It's coffee talk.
You're somewhere if you dig deep enough.
Right. But yeah, some of the oil paintings that you've done, like I said, I've seen that. And like I said, I admired all your sculpting work. And then, geez, like your oil paintings, they're fucking mind blowing. Like some of the detail and some of the blending, the work that you do. Like, I mean, there we go. Like, that is absolutely outstanding.
It's my put on a happy face. I've never painted with oils, and I hadn't painted 2D since I was a kid. Really did a couple of things maybe in the 90s, but it's all just been sculpture and makeup really since then. And I just got so tired of it. And then once I started making my own films, my own productions, it's just the people wrangling drove me nuts. I'm like, well, fuck this. I need to find something that I can do where it's just me.
Right, right. Just a breath of fresh air.
Yeah. So, and that was 5 years ago. So I just found a little set of oil paints, a little tester set, and went, let's give this a try. And it was actually on a Friday the 13th. It was May 13th, 2016. So came home, started painting a hockey mask. And so that was the first time I'd worked with oils. And so it's been a real steep learning curve for the last 6 years or so, or 5 years. But I've had a great time.
I think you got the knack of it. I think you got it down.
Yeah, I think so.
Thank you. Yeah, no, I really enjoy it. And again, with Conan, I was raised on Frank Frazetta artwork and the Bernie Wrightson.
I was going to mention that.
So it's all really coming full circle for me at this point.
Which I'm a huge fan of Frazetta's work as well. And you can definitely see that, you know, that you can see his inspiration in your work as well, which is it's fucking amazing.
I wouldn't even presume.
But
thank you.
Yeah,
I love it.
Hell yeah. And you said you started doing the Friday the 13th the weekly. You do like a week of Friday the 13th or 13 days yeah. of Friday the 13th.
Yeah, which I just started a couple of years ago, but I had a good time. So now it's turned into a thing.
I think we've got a picture of some of those, a collage of a bunch of the different Friday the 13th paintings that you've done, I think.
That one, I can get that real quick.
Okay, hell yeah.
Give me one second.
Yeah, yeah.
It came down to, I had so much Friday the 13th artwork, and there was a Friday the 13th coming up on the calendar. I just went, you know, this might be fun to actually post a piece every day.
Right.
And as far as I knew, it was the only Friday the 13th that year. And it's the minute that I finished, and I realized there was another Friday the 13th in December. okay, I can do this again. And it was just a couple of new pieces mixed in with a lot of old stuff. There was even one drawing that I did when I was like 12 or 13 years old.
That's awesome.
So it's, yeah. Thank you, Cousin Wade. My cousin has brought all my old artwork to me down here.
That's awesome. That's awesome. Would have
just been lost otherwise.
Well, yeah, there we go. One.
Is that the one you were referring to?
No. That's not the one I was. Oh. But that's just a collage of a lot of his different work right there. I probably didn't send it to you.
Yeah, I don't know if I have.
Probably didn't send that to you. But either way, that was fucking amazing as well. I mean, and you did some of the armor. You did the armor on Dracula from Dracula Untold as well, right?
Yeah, I was part of a team on that, but there are sections of it that are mine. I was the head of the sculpting team on it, but the pauldrons on the shoulders and the chest piece are very much mine.
So
there's a Universal Monster film ticked off the bucket list.
Okay. With that being said, because I love asking this with all of our guests, you know, me and Jackal Monkey are big fans of the Universal monsters, all of those movies. What is your favorite?
Frankenstein.
Everybody says that. Why is nobody gives Dracula, Bella any love anymore? It's always Karloff and the big flat-headed green guy.
I love them all, but it's Frankenstein has the same appeal to me that Jason, Godzilla, Leatherface, all these guys have. They are
yeah, that's true.
Situation not of their own making, and they're sympathetic characters, and you know, dudes are just trying to abide, really.
Right.
Nobody has love for Bella trying to give women hickeys.
I got a different kind of love for that. and like the Wolfman is a sympathetic character too, but there's something there's just more pathos to Frankenstein to the monster,
right? For sure,
he's trying so hard, and especially the end of Bride, where he finally goes, "There's my bride," and she looks at him just. My heart just breaks in half for him every single time.
Nobody loves the poor guy.
Oh, it's finally somebody just for me.
No.
Oh, God. But yeah, that's so. I would say Frankenstein, and then my second would be Creature from the Black Lagoon. That's especially nice. That trilogy right in a row. That's I can't remember the last time I was actually able to watch one of those films on its own. It's always the three of them together because that arc is very much that tragedy that I love so much. You know, it's the dude minding his business, hanging out at home. Somebody just comes and snatches him out of his living room, starts chopping him up, and you know,
right.
Fuck, he's got my heart every time.
Right. I mean, that's very true. That's very true.
And I got one question that I want to hand the mic over to Jackal Monkey because I know he's got so much going on in his head. I can see the smoke rising. But early influences, and did they go as far back as, let's say, a Lon Chaney and the makeup that he did on himself? Did you know, I mean, what was some of the early inspirations when you first got into the special effects?
Star Wars knocked me on my ass, of course. I was five when I saw that. I saw the trailer and thought that it was, I saw Chewie and thought that it was a Planet of the Apes movie. So that was my interest in Star Wars. And it just completely blew me away after that. But after that film in particular, I knew I wanted to do something special effects wise, miniature stop motion or something. And then it was American Werewolf in London that actually fine tuned it to makeup effects. So it was, you know, Rick Baker's work. I would say was probably the last straw for me. but of course I love Savini stuff. And Botine stuff is just mind boggling. I don't know how his mind works or will work, but it's stunning, incredible stuff. But of course, Dick Smith is and always will be the man.
Oh, for sure.
And that's why I am so open with my knowledge. Anytime that anybody reaches out to me, if I have the time, then yeah, I'll tell you anything that I can to help.
That's awesome.
See,
what would Dick do? You know,
see, and that's badass, and I know he'd appreciate that.
The business could use more Dick Smiths. It really could. But
damn right.
So that's I'm just doing my part, really.
That's awesome. Well, you done your part with Jackal Monkey.
Yeah, that's for damn sure.
I'm here to help, gentlemen.
The floor is yours, Jackal Monkey. Go ahead, sir.
For makeup effects.
Yeah, and like you were just saying about your interest in stop motion and miniatures. I'm very fascinated in both of those as well. Have you done any work in stop motion yet?
Just no. I worked at a stop motion studio for a while, Fred Sturr Animation. He's the guy that did the first couple of Tool videos. So I got to work with him for a couple of months. We were doing a Jimi Hendrix video. I don't know whatever eventuated of that. I don't think it ever got finished, but I got to carve some miniature sets, sculpt some little figures and ogle little miniature Tool figures.
That's cool. That's fucking cool.
So I never got to really, and it's a shame because it's just not a feasible thing anymore. You know. Always wanted to, but never got to. But that's my little Jason 3000 sculpture. I actually built a little miniature set for the photos for that. So that's about as close as I got. And one corner of the studio is filled with milk jugs and unique plastic packaging and all this stuff. So one day when I have the time, then I can get out there and I can make spaceships and do whatever I want with all that. But nothing gets thrown away. I'm this far away from being a hoarder. Watch this space, man.
Yeah, my wife was the same thing. She's like, why do you have all these fucking little Keurig cups? I'm like, I'm saving them. Don't ask questions.
You know, when the need arises,
I need my Keurig cup.
You know, everybody's going to be really grateful. So go ahead and give me all the shit that you want for now. But when the need comes up, I'll have them.
Hey, that's it.
That's it. But I better start making some shit out of it, or else I'm just a hoarder.
Yeah, right. Right. And you're gonna have a pissed off wife.
Yeah. Right. Well, she's very patient. She's a very patient angel.
I don't see how mine puts up with my shit, but she does.
We're lucky then if we can find anybody that tolerates us.
Oh, that's for sure. Like, why is there a human skin hanging on the outside of the shop?
It wouldn't dry on the inside.
It won't be there long, I promise.
Are you asking why it's outside or why there's a human skin? Because they're right. Right.
Can we get a little more specific with your question, dear?
Right, right.
Be more constructive feedback.
So, what do you I know this is probably going to be a really, really tough one. What do you think was probably the most, the hardest piece that you've ever had to work on, as far as sculpting goes?
I would probably the most tedious thing would be the dinosaurs from King Kong. Since I supervised the sculpting department for that one, so I had a hand in all of them. There were three T-Rexes. There was a bull, a matriarch, and a juvenile T-Rex. So the bull was mine. That's it. I was happy to get everybody else on track, and then I just took this is mine. I'm doing the bull. But at the end of the day, everybody had a hand in everything. But it ended up being between the dinosaurs on King Kong, and then the next job after that was Rogue. If you remember the crocodile movie Rogue.
Yes, yeah.
But between those two jobs, I spent about 2 years sculpting scales.
Oh, wow.
It's a long time to be doing.
Yeah, that's a long fucking time. Jeez.
So from now on, nothing I do will ever have scales because I've done mine.
Yeah.
Said, why is the lucid so smooth? Because I'm not sculpting fucking scales. That's why.
Yeah. You did your time on that one. For sure.
I did my time. I did your time. I did some of the dog's time. Yeah, that was. Yeah, and the thing about Rogue as well was. You know, the most fun of sculpting for me is the early stage, the blocking stuff out and getting the big forms, seeing how light bounces off of it. Then finishing it up, and, you know, all the detail is just, you know, that's just detail work to me.
Right.
At least with King Kong, we got to sculpt the dinosaurs, you know, from a frame up. With Rogue, they were just starting to bring in the milling technology. So they milled out the shape of a crocodile, so there wasn't even that stage of the sculpture to do. They milled it out in polystyrene, and then we just sat and went over the top of this form, just adding scale. So there wasn't even a break of doing form in between the scales on King Kong and the scales on Rogue.
Yeah. Oh, yes, shit.
A lot of scales. Yes, it is.
Yeah. That's enough to drive anyone insane.
But it's... But that's cool. Did my time.
let me ask you this real quick, Bill. School versus self-taught. How much schooling did you have versus how much did you teach yourself, you know, the different techniques and talent that you have?
You guys will remember. There was an age before the internet when you couldn't just go to YouTube and find out how to do stuff. So All I had at my disposal, and makeup effects wasn't even really a thing at that time. I was just a weird kid in the Bible Belt that was making monsters.
Right. Exactly.
You know, nobody really understood what I was doing. That's my dad was glad that I had chosen something. So I wasn't just going to be a bum. So he, you know, he helped me out to do something, but you know, the rest of the family was, they were skeptical at best, but all I could do was find these little bits and pieces, any making ofs that I could find, any books, Fangoria, of course. So it was all self-taught to that point. And then I was Yeah, I went to a seminar. Joe Blasco, if you know him, makeup artist Joe Blasco.
Yeah.
He came to Nashville and did a little seminar to pimp his school, basically. So I was in hook, line, and sinker. And then it just so happens that, like, just before we wrote the check for me to go to the school, then the new issue of Gore Zone came out with an article with K&B. And there was a quote from Bob Kurtzman saying, "Yeah, I went to the Blasco school and I found myself wandering around Hollywood with a really mediocre portfolio."
Oh,
well, just saved me $10,000. Thanks, Bob.
Exactly.
So, but I did take the Dick Smith advanced professional makeup course, which is just, it's basically just an encyclopedia. You can do lessons and send them back, or you can just collect the chapters as an encyclopedia. So that's basically what I did. Wow. So, and that was a correspondence thing. But no art school, no college, gratefully. 12 years was enough. I'm done. I'm out.
I hear that.
I'm going to go make my monsters.
Hey, right. Good, man.
So, and it's I've always had the same opinion, like with film school, that you could spend the, you know, however many thousands of dollars to go to film school and learn all the techniques and end up doing product that looks exactly like everybody else that went to that film school.
Yeah.
Or you could take that tuition money and go out and start making short films. You're going to learn a shitload more getting your hands dirty doing it. You're going to have your own style and you're going to have something to show for it. So that's
kind of right up Jacko Monkey's alley there. He's been working.
It's kind of what I've gotten. His film.
Yeah. Well, there is a disadvantage. I mean, there's stuff with my painting that I wrestle with on every painting, anatomy, perspective, just light and shadow, even just how to use the materials. Whereas right. If I had gone to art school, they would have taught me composition. They would have taught me how to use the materials. I'm still not even sure that I'm using them right. But as long as the picture looks like what I want it to look like, I figure it's fine.
Right? Hey, but, hell yeah!
Like Dick Smith said, if it works, it's not wrong.
Hey.
It's good enough for Dick. It's good enough for me.
Hey, damn right.
there is both. But just like earlier this year that I decided to start, go back and do some more learning. So, and it's all there on YouTube. So any kind of tutorials that you want. So it's a brushed up of my anatomy and my perspective. Then I just got too busy to follow it up with the light and shade, but I'll get there. But, so there are pros and cons.
Well, awesome. Awesome.
I stand by self-taught.
Right. That's pretty inspiring, Bill. You know, my son plays guitar. He is all self-taught, and over the course of the past couple years, everybody in the family can see the progression in his talent. Just never took a guitar lesson. One learned off of the internet, and I think that right there has. You know, granted, a little bit different art form, but I think that has allowed him to really incorporate his own style into it instead of just copying what somebody else does. He has a wide musical taste, so that helps everything. And I think that kind of goes along with what you were saying, you know. And that's exactly right. You take that tuition money, there's however many thousands of dollars that you're going to spend at art school, and go out and make a short film and get your hands dirty. That is absolutely great advice.
Yeah, well, you can come out of the schools with the diplomas and all that stuff, but there's no guarantee that you're going to get work at that
point. Right.
You know, so at least if you're out there making films on your own, then you're making films. Boom, exactly. You're a filmmaker. You know, it's a lot of people benefit from the structure of school, and I probably could have used a little more myself. But if you have enough passion for it, like your son, the passion will keep you at it.
It drives you. Yes. It's your main motivation. If you don't have a passion in something, you know, you don't find that motivation.
Right.
That passion drives you. And, yeah. And, Jacko Monkey, you got a passion, you know, for making films and doing special effects.
Making monsters as well.
Talk about that, brother. Are you there?
No,
there you go. There you go. Go ahead. Go ahead. Talk about your want to make films, because listening to Bill, that has to be very inspiring.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I've been writing a script for about 3 years now. I'm halfway through my third rewrite, but I'm pushing through everything. I've got everything fleshed out, coming up with all these different characters and writing. Right, making people want to actually care about these characters. It's a slasher film, of course, yeah. But it's just having these connections and people wanting to actually care about these characters and not make them, you know, I don't want the killer to kill these guys, like,
yeah.
That sort of thing is what I'm trying to put to it, and just go a little bit deeper in with stuff like you were saying, like with Jason's mom and everything. That's kind of a little bit. Of I guess in part is with the story in that I'm writing is there's a whole lot of cover up between the oldest son killing his two youngest siblings, and the mother covers it up, and you know, because she doesn't want her baby to be taken away, like she has to protect her baby. So
yeah,
but then the evil little bastard gets out and then he kills the neighbor. So.
Well, the script's got to move,
right?
The script must be read.
Exactly. But it's something I've been working on for quite a while, and I'm like I said, talking with people like you and other artists and directors and stuff. It's like it's people like you that gave me the passion to actually want to and the courage to keep going and to push through all these insecurities that I had and just say, fuck it. If I'm going to do it, I'm going to do it. Go for it.
You're very kind to say so, but thank you. But yeah, man, it's just got to be a burning desire in you. And just do it is the thing as well. Cause it's, we were developing a whole bunch of different scripts, different ideas. And then a location, cause the biggest problem was securing locations. And then I hooked up with another little filmmaking group. This is, this is 10 years ago now. But they were doing 48-hour films. So I joined in with them one weekend. And they had a location at their disposal. And I said, would we be able to shoot here for like a week or so or a few weekends? And they okayed it. So I went and I just wrote a script for that location.
Awesome.
So that's wrote the script for that location. Cashed in an old life insurance policy for the funds. So, but it's not a great film. And I'm not gonna kid you. It's a glorified 48-hour film, but we made our feature film for it was under $5,000 US. We shot it across 8 days. That's including pickups and additional dialogue. So, and the whole thing was under 9 months from concept to finished film. So, wow. And I just didn't want to spend any more time on it than that. It was just, it was a matter of just showing that we could do it.
Right. You
know? So it is what it is. And on IMDb, it's got a 4 point something rating, but then so do films with much, much more than a $5,000 budget. So
right. And that's the thing too, with me, a lot of those ratings don't even matter. Like I don't go by what fucking ratings they got on there.
I'm pleased that people are actually judging it as a film against real movies.
For sure. Like you said, with a budget less than $5,000, and see, and that gives me hope, because that's my budget for my film coming up is $5,000. So that like I said, I definitely know it can be done.
Just work smart, treat your people good, feed your people. A pizza goes a long way.
Hell yeah.
you know, anybody that's willing to give their time and their back to help you get this thing done, they're gold.
Right. You know what I mean? Hell yeah. Definitely show respect to everybody involved. Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah.
Let me ask you this, Bill, being an artist and, you know, there's, you know, different kinds of art. My art would be, you know, I guess my voice and, you know, doing the shows and whatnot. You are obviously sculpting, oil paintings. We got a few artists in our group, Night of Living Dreads. What have you ever come across, you know, an artist block to where you just couldn't find the motivation, even though it was, you know, your passion? And how did you get through it? And how do you get through it for anybody who may be, you know, struggling with, man, am I good enough? Should I even be doing this? Because I know it has to go through even the greats like yourself.
Thank you. But it's a job, you know, and it's, again, I'm sure it was Stephen King that said, artists get inspired. The rest of us get up and go to work.
Right.
And I've got so much going on, so many different things at any given time. If I'm not particularly feeling the passion, there's always some little tedious job that can be done on this, or just setting this up, or even just cleaning the studio, as long as you just keep busy. Because I'm out in the studio by 4 a.m. And I work through till 6 p.m. So there's always something happening. So whether if the inspiration is there, outstanding, cool, just plow through it. If it's not there, there's enough other shit that you can do just to keep the whole thing. It's a massive chessboard. As long as you just keep moving the pieces forward, you know, you make progress and you get to where you want to be.
There you go.
Awesome. That's damn good advice.
That's damn good advice. I know I've had to do it numerous times, not thinking the show was very good or I was good enough, but it was the passion that was driving me. I mean, the show's going on about 3 years now. Never thought we'd be talking to the likes of yourself. We've had Tommy McLaughlin on. I mean, never thought we would talk to some of the people that we have talked to, and it was just, all right, keep moving forward. You may not feel like it's worth it now. Keep doing it. You never know what's going to happen. So that's awesome advice. And, you know, this comes from, again, someone like yourself, Bill, who's worked on, you know, I mean, just huge
like literal blockbuster films. Yeah. I mean, several blockbuster films. I mean, And right, but yeah, before we, well, yeah, and before we run out of time, one of the questions I was definitely wanting to ask, and District 9, what did you do in District 9? Did you do work on the prawn?
Yes, I sculpted on the arm, the arm that transforms first. That was David Ming and Greg Broadmoor design on that one. So it's basically just translating their designs into three dimensions.
Awesome. On
that. You know, but it's a right place, right time. Man, I didn't pick these jobs that I worked on, but I've worked on some things that are really cool. You know?
Right. Like, that's what I was at. District 9 just happens to be my favorite science fiction movie as well. I was like, that's all. I was like, holy shit.
I mean, I've worked on so much crap as well, though, that every time I watch it, I sit through, I go to a screening of a movie, and it's like, holy shit, that's really good. These waves of surprise and relief just wash over me. You know?
Oh, man. I wouldn't say that, but and that was another one. I remember seeing the trailer on YouTube for a zombie movie called Returner. But yes. did that ever come out?
No, it didn't. That's actually what that was the first film that we started developing. Because I'm a zombie nut. That's when I was a kid. I discovered Dawn of the Dead, and every day through a summer vacation, every night I watched it at least once. And then Day of the Dead comes out, my mom, bless her, snuck me into the theater. There was absolutely no one under 18 admitted. Somehow she got me in. I was
15. That's so badass.
So my mom is sitting through Day of the Dead with me. And it's, the gore is not a problem, but it's just all the racial shit and the cursing at the beginning of the film is what made me hugely uncomfortable watching with my mom. But and when that came out on video, and I bought a used videotape of that for $99. You know, that's 16 years old. $99 is a lot of money for a But I bought it and every night watched it for 3 months straight for a couple of years. So zombies have always been my thing, and just completely surprised, shocked, and blown away by the Dawn of the Dead remake. Again, I sat down to watch it with my arms folded. You know, all right, do your thing. So incredibly impressed with that one. The first thing I started doing was this zombie thing, which is still very different, and I haven't released everything. I don't really see myself going back to make another film at this point. It was fun. I wanted to prove that I could do it, and I did it, warts and all. And then also while we were developing it was when Walking Dead really kind of came into the spotlight, and you know, zombies always been the blue collar monster. You know, it didn't make you popular in high school to say that you were watching Fulci's Zombie,
right? Know? No shit, right?
Endure if you love these things. And I go to a kiosk in the mall, and some girl sees my zombie T-shirt and goes, "Oh, I love zombie movies." Really, honey? What's your favorite Fulci? Yeah, go back to piercing ears. You know, so
you've never seen The Beyond.
Once zombies hit the cover of Entertainment Weekly, that was just a bit too much. And if you remember, that whole period was just so oversaturated with, and I lost all interest in zombies at that point. So, but it started to come back up. But we did a ton of work for it. The script is 3 hours long. So it's been her really of zombies.
Oh yeah.
And we were doing really different stuff with the look of the zombies as well. We're going very, very forensic with the look of the zombies. So some of the stuff that's, you know, like if you've seen a lot of forensic stuff, there's some stages of decomposition where you can just see an eye, and that's the only thing that really identifies it as a human being. And so they're so grotesque and distorted, and that's really where I wanted to go with it.
Right.
So as opposed to just, you know, the same old cheekbones and, you know, snared lip denture and
right.
It's cool, but we've kind of seen that now.
Yeah. How about a different version of that? That's awesome. I like your version of it better, just the eye and, you know, completely disfigured type.
We have a picture of that one, don't we? From Return.
You might.
Let's see.
I'm really proud of a lot of stuff.
There we go.
Yeah, that's my
yeah
Brittany puppet named after the South Park episode. So that one's actually in the trailer as well, and that was my friend that did the Peter makeup for What We Do in the Shadows. Did tons of design and sculpture and puppeteering for us on that one. So he's actually puppeteering that
awesome
in the trailer. So
awesome.
We have just a couple minutes left. Why don't you tell us about BillHuntStudio.com? Can people buy paintings? What can they find out over there? Tell us about Bill Hunt Studio.
I'm not a great businessman, as my wife keeps reminding me. My whole business plan was I just want to do a shitload of work and then she can sell it when I die. Not hugely thought out, and she wasn't wildly impressed with it either. So we're refining the business end of it. The website is desperately out of date at this point, so we've got to go back to that. But I'm getting stuff up on like Redbubble, I'm going to try and get some prints up on like Printify and that kind of thing, because New Zealand is lovely. I absolutely adore it. There are no thoughts about moving anywhere else, but living on an island has its drawbacks, like shipping. Especially in a COVID world as well. That Brittany puppet that you just showed the picture of, sold that to a guy in the States, and it cost me $400 to ship it.
Holy shit.
So yeah, and a painting that size now is costing like $120-$130 to ship.
Wow.
It's time to really kind of change the business model a bit. So I'm aiming for more local stuff. The stuff is available. That's I can be contacted through Instagram, Facebook. The website still gets me messages. We'll get that revamped real soon. So I'm available for stuff. I'm available for commissions, but it's just really expensive is the thing.
Yeah.
So
keep that in mind. If you want Bill Hunt stuff, it's going to be a little pricey because he lives on a fucking island.
But it's totally fucking
zombies won't get here.
He's zombie free.
Zombie free.
But if a zombie outbreak does break out in New Zealand, you may be kind of screwed. You got a boat handy?
But there's not that far for them to run either.
Very true.
There's a part of me that's yearning for it. So
yeah, I think a lot of us have that same sentiment.
Yeah, zombie dreams. I have zombie dreams quite a bit, but I've never had a zombie nightmare.
Right. No shit.
Not me either. Bill, we want to say bye off camera. And we also want to say, bye right now. So, stick around. Don't go nowhere. It was an absolute pleasure having you with us.
Thank you again.
Thank you.
A lot of fans of your work. You're an amazing artist, sculptor, special effects guy. And, people probably saw the announcement for the show and was like, who the fuck is Bill Hunt? And then they see what you have done in some of your bigger pictures and some of the bigger pictures that you've worked on. They're like, oh yeah, I've seen that guy's stuff. Yeah. So I'm glad that the viewers they have loved it. The chatters, we all like the behind the scenes stuff and talking about this. So thank you so much for joining us tonight.
Man, thank you guys. I'm hugely flattered.
Thank you again.
Really, really cool. I appreciate it.
Awesome. Bill, just stay with us just for a minute. We'll put you in the backstage. We're gonna say bye to everybody and another great show. Did that work out good for you there, Jackal Monkey?
He is
your mentor. I seen you fangirling over there.
I think
you're fangirl. Every time you freeze, you fangirl. I don't maybe you're just not freezing. You're just like maybe sometimes.
Yeah, I mean, again, it was an awesome show. Like I said, I couldn't so glad that he actually took his time out of his day to join us, and
absolutely,
really, really grateful to have another awesome fucking another legend on the show.
We've only just begun.
Yep, it's only.
That was pretty good, right?
No, hell yeah.
No, I'm not quitting my day job. Trust me.
Well, thanks for joining, everybody.
Yes, thank you all for joining us in the chat. As always, this will the audio version will be over there at 9011dreads.com, and the whole video shebang right here will be on YouTube probably later on tonight. So again, thank you, Bill. Thank you, Jackal Monkey. Thank you, all you guys in the chat. We've had a blast. We hope you have. And we're going to see you very, very soon this coming Saturday. Let me look at my revised schedule. Ari Lehman is going to be joining us this Saturday over there, 6 p.m. at Scurry Face. Don't miss out on that one. The first Jason and the name of his band. We'll talk about it. We'll see you then.